This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12, some headlines you just can't scroll past, can you? Man finds £130,000 cash inside kitchen cupboards he bought off eBay. Wow, I'll be reading that one later. I had a question this week. Have I ever remembered to do a question on Mystery Hour? I had one this week, I've forgotten it. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Anyway, Mystery Hour is upon us, your weekly opportunity to enjoy the sort of satisfaction that is not normally available anywhere else on your radio dial. So, get in touch. If you haven't listened to this feature before, can we call it a feature? Sounds a bit great. Of course we can call it a feature. It's got its own board game. If you haven't listened to this before, you are, I think, in for a bit of a treat and possibly also a surprise. It's very different from the rest of the show. It's quite funny. Actually, that's not fair. The rest of the show can be quite funny as well at times. It's not very serious. There you go. It certainly has almost nothing to do with the news. It's like the radio equivalent of those notes and queries columns that you got in newspapers. Before Google came along and made it easy to find out almost anything about anything simply by tapping stuff into a search engine. For example, this morning I was trying to find out how I could stop my Spotify pausing when I go on Twitter on my phone. Yeah, oh yeah, that's the level of glamour and excitement in my life. Anyway, I mention that because you're not allowed to Google stuff. So someone rings in and asks a question that you might be able to find out the answer to, but don't. If you know the answer already, then you're allowed to ring in and answer it. And I will say, what are your qualifications? And you will say something like, oh, I have a PhD in applied mathematics, despite it being unnatural, according to the Social Mobility Commissioner. Or you might say, I saw it on telly last night. So don't fall into the trap of thinking it has to be a formal qualification. You know, like you got your Bag of Gymnastics Award 4, or you passed your cycling proficiency at Stourport Police Station in 1985. All of those could be valid qualifications. But equally, you might have read it last year, or you might have seen it on the telly last night. Lots of... it's a very broad church. All it means is, how do you know? When I say, what are your qualifications? What it means is, how do you know that thing that you know that you just told us? Right? And there's also a prize of the Mystery Hour board game. They're now available in John Lewis, soon to be available in other high street retailers, hopefully, but also available, of course, from the website, mysteryhour.co.uk, and the other lot that's named after a rainforest. If your contribution is my favourite of the week, I will give you a Mystery Hour board game. I can't say fairer than that. Full terms and conditions are available at lbc.co.uk. 6 minutes after 12, I have neither a pen nor a piece of paper, so we'll be relying upon either Keith or my memory or a combination of both. No, you haven't got one either. I told you we were in an unfamiliar studio this afternoon. And we'll just see how it unravels, shall we? The ultimate prize, the ultimate accolade, is a Railiota. And to refer back to your... I had a woke watch today as well, thinking about sound effects. To refer back to the question of what your qualifications are, if your qualifications for answering a question are just breathtakingly relevant, if it is incredible, if we get a question about, I don't know, Egyptian geese, and you are an actual Egyptian goose, then there is a strong chance that you will get a Railiota. If it's highly unlikely that there are more than two people on the planet better qualified to answer the question that you're answering, then you will get a Railiota, which is sensational. Martin is in Warwick to kick things off. Martin, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Martin.
When does your brain tell your body the nutrition it needs? By way of example, we know we take vitamin supplements, but if you're walking around the supermarket, I find myself occasionally being gravitated towards things like fruit or vegetables or avocados. Why is it I suddenly get a craving? Is my brain telling my body the nutrients and vitamins and supplements it needs? What triggers that reaction?
Yeah, I think I understand. So most obviously you get thirsty, don't you? Your body's telling you that you need to hydrate, that you need water, or you get hungry, and your body's telling you that you need food, sort of full stop. But you're looking more for the specific. If you have a craving for something, it probably means your levels are depleted.
Yes, And by way of example, so obviously I love chocolate, and so that's a natural thing I might always put in the basket, even if I don't actually need it.
That's not an urge, though, is it? That's just that I like chocolate, so I'm putting some in my basket.
But there are times I gravitate towards food again. So I use the example.
No, I understand. Give me other ones on the. What else is on the list? Avocados.
Why am I suddenly craving avocado?
Yeah. What else is on that list?
Bananas. Sometimes it's fruit.
So that would be potassium. Like, so if it's bananas, then you're short. Your potassium levels are low, and your brain is telling your body, or your body is telling your brain that your potassium levels are low. I don't know what's in avocados. All sorts of yummy stuff, actually. You realise that if you weren't buying so many avocados, you'd be able to afford your own house, Martin.
Actually, I might buy some and just plant them in the ground, and then actually...
Who knows?
I'd start my own plantation.
I love that. Anything else? Avocado, bananas?
No, but it's... I take supplements, but then why am I suddenly also wanting...
No, let's not complicate it. Let's not complicate it with supplements. Your body is saying to you, there's something in bananas or avocados. I'm trying to think what I get similar urges for. It'll come to me, probably too late. We shall try and find out. So it is like your body craving foods for chemical or medical reasons. Just explain it to us. I really like that question, but it's possibly... I don't think it's certain that we'll get an answer. John's in Croydon. John, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, James.
Carry on, John.
The acronym VIP become commonplace? Like, if you went to a lot of clubs and things like that nowadays, you'd expect there to be some sort of VIP area.
Yeah.
When did that sort of be banded about? Like, when did that come quite a regular thing?
Yeah, you mean just like as a recognised, rather than just a simple description? It's like there's a very important person over there. VIP became an actual... kind of status.
Yeah, because if you look at like race courses and stuff like that, they have royal enclosures and stuff like that, and that was obviously to signify that the royals were the important people. That was your so-called VIP area. But when did it switch over to these people being known as very important and sort of that in society?
Nice question. Really? I mean, I'm just speculating wildly. I'd perhaps talk about Victorian times. Sounds likely, but I don't know is the short answer, so we will find out. When did VIP become a thing? Who introduced it? Where was it introduced? It's going to be England, isn't it? Possibly America, I suppose, but certainly English language. Tony's in Chingford. Tony, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
It's about flat-screen TVs. I was looking at mine earlier, and I can understand where all the other colours come from, but where did the black light come from in a LCD telly?
I don't understand the question.
Well, you get three pixels, don't you? The red, green, and blue.
Yeah.
So you can make all the other colours and white.
Yeah.
But how do they make black?
It's just nothing.
I thought that myself, but it's actually darker than the screen. So
is it?
They're obviously making up black as a colour. So
how do they make black on tellies? Is what you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah. There must be some sort of technology going on in there.
How do they make white?
All the colours together is white.
Is it?
Same as the opposite of being a prism. You know, you put white into a prism, all the colours come out, so you put all the colours into a prism.
Yeah, white light. Yeah, good point. You could tell I was bad at physics, couldn't you? I never did reveal what grade I got. I remember that vaguely from physics. I had refraction, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
So white, the black light and flat screen TV. Yeah, all right. I mean, that's actually a really interesting question. It's a good job I wasn't rude to you, because I thought it was really boring at first, but now I've actually taken a bit of time to think about it. It's a really interesting question. I think it is, anyway.
Yeah, there must be some physics in there going on that I don't know about.
Well, that's just the way things are, mate. That's natural, you see. Oh, no, my mistake. You're a man. You should know that. It is 12 minutes after 12. I won't be taking this from Gary. James, what was the name that Theo wrote down for you earlier? That doesn't neither qualifies for mystery and nor gets the time of day from me. Tom's in Sudbury. Tom, question or answer?
I have a question, James.
Carry on.
My question is, why does white skin exist? That's the short version of it. I got thinking about this, that...
Why do you hate your country, Tom? Why do you hate your country?
but I did look at my white skin with moles on it and thinking my hunter-gatherer ancestors.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have got terrible sunburn if I was out.
I often think, I watched The Northman yesterday. Have you seen it yet, the new film?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's pretty gruesome. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if everybody will. It's very, very grisly. And I did think about that when you thought about the Vikings sailing all around the place and wondered whether they sort of stuck to the northern areas because they were, because they could have gone down and conquered Spain or something like that, I imagine, in those longboats. Exactly. But they would have got a lot of sunburn. Would it not be chicken and egg a bit? Would it not be that if once you moved into areas where there wasn't a lot of sunlight, you stopped producing melanin on anything like the same level?
Well, that's the bit in there. It's something to do with melanin a bit.
I would assume so. But we'll find out.
I've been saving it for mystery. Once evolutionary advance is conferred by pale skin, assuming, as our ancestors came out of Central or Western Africa, that our ancestors did have darker skin and it got paler through northern migrations.
Yes, I guess there may be no evolutionary advantage, but the evolutionary advantage of dark skin in hot climates ceased to matter and therefore the skin change, but I'd love to hear someone actually answer that who knows what they're talking about instead of me, even if I'm knocking at the door of the right answer. I love that one, Tom. Thank you. David's in Dublin. David, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Can I quickly just say thank you and all your listeners for reminding us that you're not all gone mad over there?
Yes, it's not just me, but I take your point. I pop up on Irish radio occasionally as a sort of like a kind of tribune. Yeah. It's crazy. Go on.
You'll never get to where it's standing. It sounds like Christchurch, but it's a place called Boris Court, which I've never heard of before. It's got one extra oil.
I love the fact the Russian embassy in Dublin, where you are, is on Orwell Road, which I thought was particularly hilarious as well. So
they wanted to change it, but it's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Go on.
Come here, I'll give you the question. What is the oldest gesture in the world? So, like, is it a salute? Or do you know when your mum puts her finger to her lips to tell you to be quiet?
Yeah.
I reckon it's probably that one, but I don't know. But what's, like, is it, like, you know, putting your finger, you know, just a gesture to someone else? Like,
If it's known, would it be known? Yeah. Would history have recorded? I suppose you're looking for the oldest recorded example of a physical gesture, whether it be in hieroglyphics.
You have weapons, like you salute the queen, and that stuff goes all the way back to, like, I think it's evolutionary. It's probably, we were having a row about this, you're like me and my pap.
Yeah, go
I reckon
on.
It's the finger to the lips.
It would make sense, wouldn't it? Because that would be cross-cultural as well. The salute is something to do with lifting your visor to show other knights who you are. So there's usually a behavioural explanation for these gestures, but putting your fingers to your lips to tell, like you'd be telling your fellow cavemen to stay quiet because there's a saber-toothed tiger outside the cave or something like that, and you'd know. Would you know what it means?
Could be older.
Yeah, I like that. Whether we find one or not, I do not know. I love that line at the beginning in Romeo and Juliet where you say, "Do you bite your teeth at me, sir?" or something like that. "Bite your thumb. Do you bite your thumb at me, sir?" That was obviously a gesture at some point as a sort of, you're giving someone the finger. 12:16 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The oldest recorded physical gesture, the evolutionary advantage of pale skin, black and white actually here, because the black light on a flat screen TV, how does that happen? The origin of the, is it an acronym, VIP? VIP? No, it's not quite, is it? Of the initials VIP as a denoter of status, and the biological explanation for how your body tells you that you're craving certain nutrients. 0345 6060973 for all of those. It's 12:16.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 19 after 12. Here's a story. I told you earlier, in much more comical circumstances, there are some headlines you just can't scroll past. It's an amazing story that The Guardian have just published. Nonverbal black teenager who has never left UK detained at immigration centre. A woman has described how her 17-year-old black British son was found at an immigration detention centre after going missing while being treated for psychosis. He's never left Britain. There you go, man. Global Britain once again. 19 minutes after 12 is the time. Craig's in Doncaster. Craig, question or answer?
It's an answer about the LCD screens or the flat panel screens.
Oh yeah, go on.
So the short answer is it depends entirely on the technology behind it. If you were to have one of the first generation LCD flat screens, it has sort of three filters of liquid crystals in front of a diode behind it that kicked out only white light. So you would pass current across either the red, the green, or the blue diode and get the mix of colour that way. Black on those is the absence of any colour coming through at all, so the LED would just be off.
So when... who was it? Tony said that he reckons it's darker than when it's off. He was just wrong. It's just some sort of optical illusion.
on the first generation flat screen panels, they had a uniform backlight which lit up the screen. That's why sometimes blacks always appear sort of washed out and grey.
Yeah, but so it's not that. He thinks his black is darker than the screen itself when it's off.
Well, on the newer generation ones, they have something called local dimming, which means they can turn off the backlight per section of LEDs or LCDs, which means that part of the black screen would be darker than the rest of the screen.
There you go.
When it's turned on.
Qualifications?
So I'm just really sad, and I watch YouTube, and I don't sleep at night, so I come across it.
I mean, how do you find stuff like... I mean, you're not sad at all, because this is interesting information and knowledge, but what... I mean, I don't know what the entry level would be for that sort of enthusiasm on YouTube.
As far as the YouTube algorithm goes, it's literally just random ping-ponging between subjects when I'm that kind of tired and not been able to sleep.
So. Yeah, fair enough. Anything that engages you gets the old cogs whirring, and it's earned you a mystery hour round of applause, Craig.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Louise is in Watford. Louise, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
So I make icing sugar a lot, because I make cakes, and yes. I make buttercream icing, and when I'm using my stand mixer and I pour the icing sugar in, I get these huge clouds of icing coming up into the air, and there's like always a layer of, you know, icing over my countertops, and I'm breathing it in.
Right.
And you can taste the sugar in your, you know, even though your mouth's closed, things like that. And I just wanted to know, really, like, does that count towards my, I don't know, daily intake of sugar? Like, does that up my calories? You know, because I get like,
I don't know if it's going to make a noticeable difference to the amount of calories that you're consuming.
I mean, you'd be surprised. Like,
well, you're not snorting it through a £20 note, are you? It's sort of wafting around the kitchen in a sort of cloud of icing sugar. So, I mean,
no,
the short answer would be yes, because
icing sugar on my counters is really thick, and you know I have to constantly clean down every surface.
Yeah, I know, but your nostrils can only. It's not like you're. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be indelicate, but it's not like you're developing icing sugar bogeys, is it, or anything like that? You're just gonna.
I think you do, but I mean, would.
There's only one way to find out, Louise.
Sorry. Oh yeah, I guess. But can you like take sugar in through your nose, I guess?
What it would do, it would get caught up in your saliva, and your nose is connected to your mouth. The ear, nose and throat are all sort of tubular, aren't they? And so you will end up swallowing stuff that has gone in to your via your nose.
Right.
But it's not going to make a difference. I don't think you need to go on a diet to counteract the effect of inhaling a bit of icy sugar when you're making a cake.
Are you
satisfied with that answer, or do you want me to get someone who sounds cleverer than me?
Well, it'd always be nice to know if there was like some more science behind it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm fairly confident I've covered it, but I will leave it on the board, Louise. And why do you make so many cakes? Is it your business?
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, we shall see. You didn't make Boris's cake, did you? That time when he.
No, I didn't.
Okay, hang in there. He'll need more soon. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. George is in Plovdiv in Bulgaria. George, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
We call the people of Germany Germans and the Spanish, the people of Spain Spanish. Why do you call the Dutch, the people of the Netherlands, Dutch? And I kept reminding myself to search this answer on the internet, and I keep forgetting. So perhaps somebody knows.
You've already answered it in a way.
I don't know.
Well, because we call people from Germany Germans, but what do German people call Germans?
Deutsch.
Correct. What does that sound just like?
Well, that's different than...
It is now, you know, but it would have been once you'd have had high Deutsch and low Deutsch, and one of them, either high Deutsch or low Deutsch, became Dutch.
Okay. Because the people of the Netherlands called themselves Nederlanders.
Yes. But we're going back to, I guess, English descriptions of Middle Europe, and it is it comes from Deutsch. It comes from the German word for German.
All right. Don't worry, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does, Thank doesn't you. It? It's a nice one, that. I like that. I think, if you ask me what my qualifications are, I think it's come up before.
Yeah, you can give yourself a round of applause.
Well, I do that every minute of every day, don't I, to be honest. But at least this time it's official.
Okay, it's a good answer.
Cheers, George. Look after yourself. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Because it was Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and the other Low Countries. The Germanic, you think of it as Germanic, and Germanic people today are not confined to modern Germany. Bernadette is in St. Albans. Bernadette, question or answer?
A question.
Carry on.
Why, when you walk outside and it's cold, do your eyes start to water?
To lubricate them.
Well, are they not already lubricated? They've got water in them.
Yeah, but because it's cold, the cold dries them out, you see. And so your eye sends a message to your brain saying, we need some lubrication, and then the eyes start watering.
So they also have the ability to know how much, because some days it's more.
Well, let's not get bogged down in the detail here. The short answer to your question is that the cold weather dries your eyes out quicker than, you know, body temperature weather, and therefore they need extra lubrication in their eyes. And everybody's different. Some people start crying, don't they, in strange circumstances?
Yes, I mean, it's pouring out. Some days, and some days it's not. So is it because the temperature outside isn't as cold?
It's a slight malfunction. It'll have something to do with how hydrated you are. And the colder it is, the more your eyes will water, I think. I've got quizzical looks coming back from my colleagues, but I'm fairly confident on this one, aren't you?
Yes, I'm still a bit puzzled. I'm not convinced.
All right.
Okay.
No, fine.
With moisture.
Forget it. No, sorry, I'll leave it on the board. I'll wait for an expert then. I thought this country had enough of experts.
On some subjects, that is correct.
Not on Mystery Hour. Only on matters of constitutional significance and the imposition of economic sanctions upon ourselves. Not on the questions of why our eyes water in cold weather. Joe's in Bristol. Joe, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why do we have such strange collective nouns for animals?
That, Joe, is a brilliant question.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Why don't we just say group for everything? Or pack, or gang, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, like flamboyant for flamingos, for example.
It's not, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Are you serious?
Who decided that a group of flamingos is a flamboyance?
A flamboyance of flamingos. Oh, that's lovely, isn't it? I'm trying to think what my favourite is. It's murder. Is it a murder of crows? It is, isn't it? A murder of crows.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a brilliant question. So it's not who decides, it's why do we have it?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that question. That's one of my favourite questions ever. I can't believe we've never done it before. And whenever I say that out loud, it often turns out that we have actually done it before, but I've forgotten the answer. And indeed the fact that the question has been asked. So it may even be in the board game, but we'll find out. Joe, I love that. Is it really? You promised me it's a flamboyance of flamingos.
That's what Google tells me.
That's fantastic. A flamboyance of flamingos. We've got a flamboyance of academics up next. It's Professor Hal in Brighton. Professor Hal, question or answer?
Good day, James. This is an answer and a commentary on the evolutionary advantage of having white skin.
Fantastic.
This is, in fact, a hardy perennial, and it's all about homeostasis, the effort to maintain a constant internal environment, because your body's producing heat and needs to get rid of some of that heat under certain circumstances, but also the environment is either contributing or drawing heat. Mm. And it's a bit counterintuitive. White normally reflects things, doesn't it? So we wear cricketing whites in the summer, and black is an absorber. So you put a black T-shirt on a sunny day, you feel a lot hotter. But also, white is a good insulator. It keeps body heat in, and black is a good conductor. It lets body heat out. So dark skin scatters lots of sunlight to avoid cell damage and also allows lots of body heat to escape. So on balance, if you're living in a very cold environment, the white allows you to keep more of your body heat within your body and stop hypothermia. And that's why the opposite of that is the Bedouins, who wear very dark abayas, which allows them to get rid of lots of their body heat, but they stand in the shade even though it's very hot.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, there is an evolutionary advantage to it as you head north. You need the reflection more than you need the absorption.
Yes, well, you keep more of your body heat within you because you're always struggling to keep yourself warm enough, so you lose less heat than you produce.
Well, you live and learn. Qualifications?
My munificent employer, the University of Brighton, allows me to profess science to the public with pleasure.
I met another professor last night, but you're all right. He's a professor of war studies, so he's not going to threaten your Mistria status, your Mistria supremacy.
And Happy to hear it.
Brilliant. Really interesting guy, actually. Professor of War Studies at Warwick University. We're going to be getting him on the show with regard to the situation in Ukraine. And you're on the telly again this week.
Yes. I'm delighted to be on the season two of How.
How?
Currently on CITV.
What are you on again?
How.
How. How.
Yes, 5:30 on CITV every day this week.
I don't know if I wanted you to do a full advert. I mean, you know, we're still broadcasting at that time. I think Andrew's in for Eddie this week, isn't he? So, but anyway, round of applause for Professor Howe. You are supposed to do that, aren't you? When they say Howe, you're supposed to go Howe.
That was then, James. Times have changed.
Oh, outrageous. You're telling me you're working from home next. 12:30 is the time. Thomas Watts is here with your headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Questions that still need answers include the biology or the chemistry, I suppose, of cravings, when your body knows it's short of certain nutrients and therefore as you wander around the supermarket you find yourself inexorably drawn towards bananas or avocado pears. When did VIP become a thing? When did we start using that phrase? Or what would you call it? Is it a phrase, VIP? I don't know. Anyway, that description of very important people. We've done the black light. Tony, I didn't write down who answered it, did you? Who answered the black light question? Because that was actually a really nice answer in the end. It was a good question. It was Craig in Doncaster, wasn't it? Thank you, Keith. Skin colour, we've done. Hal answered that, so I can cross that one. I should do this off-air, really, shouldn't I? This kind of biz. The oldest gesture. What is the oldest gesture in recorded history? As in a sort of clenched fist or a shush by putting your finger to your... or biting your thumb, sir. Do you bite your thumb at me, sir? Do you bite your thumb at me? Do you know what? One of these days. And then Keith's just done that thing that Ross does in Friends. Like, him and Monica had it, didn't they, when they were growing up as a sort of really rude expression, but only they knew what it meant. When you sort of bang your forearms together, like that was funny. Icing sugar. Louise is worried. I don't know if she's worried. She wants to know whether or not when she inhales. And quite a few people, Louise, I have to tell you, have been in touch to say if you are doing this on a regular basis, it's your lungs you should be worried about, not your calorie intake, and that inhaling icing sugar, if you're doing it every day and most days, it could have a bad effect on your lungs. So luckily, it's very easy to buy face masks these days. It's never been easier, has it, to get hold of a face mask? You might want to think about that. Why do our eyes water in cold weather? And why do we have collective nouns for animals? That, so far, is probably my favourite contribution, because it's just lovely, isn't it? Will is in Camberwell. Will, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Are some musical instruments definitively harder to play than others? You're going to help solve a bit of a family scuffle with this, because my parents are moving out of their house after 39 years.
Gosh.
And my mum's got an old cello kicking about and an old guitar. Here's me up here with a trombone. And we were chatting the other day, and I said, well, I'm, you know, implying I was a bit better at trombone, wasn't I? And she said, wow, trombone is easy, isn't it? Cello and guitar, they're much harder. Trombone, you're just breathing through it. Does that make it easier?
I think that's a good question. I don't know how it would be answerable, do you?
Well,
because you use the word definitive. It's going to be subject. I mean, I don't know. Subjective or...
Well, some languages are harder, definitively, aren't they? I think German takes more hours to learn, for example, than English or French as well. And Russian is further down.
Yeah,
still
I
Chinese
know, you're right. I mean, what do we reckon? Well, what about a church organ? That's got to be... You've got all sorts of stuff going on with a church organ, haven't you?
You have, your arms and your feet and stuff. But
and you've got the stops as well, not just the keys. You've got the stops,
well,
you've got...
Yeah.
So it must be more complicated, but how would you measure it? How would you measure what is the hardest instrument to play? Someone might know that. I mean, it's probably a known thing in musical circles. The hardest instrument
probably.
To learn is the zither.
Exactly.
The ukulele is the easiest, pretty much.
Well, triangle is probably the easiest.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, that doesn't really count well, does it?
No, absolutely not.
Percussion is the easiest to play, but not necessarily to play well. It's not the recorder, honestly. A recorder is quite difficult to play. London's Burning is easy, but Greensleeves isn't. I like this question, Will. I like it. You're
Thank
on.
Thank you.
I shall try and find out for you. Are musical... Happen. Yeah, is there a sort of hierarchy of difficulty when it comes to musical instruments? I can't play any. Isn't that embarrassing? I've developed a... I've developed a fondness in my old age for walking through old parts of London. I don't want to give too much away because I don't want a sort of mass crowd of people turning up. Well, I guess I probably already have told you, but the Inns of Court around down by Temple are amazing. I read a lot of history books and historical fiction set in the Tudor era. And when the Temples became a big deal, it changed the nature of British society, and so much of the architecture is unchanged. I love bits of London. You get it usually by the river as well, where if you point yourself in the right direction, the view is pretty much the same as it would have been 100 or even 200 years ago. And some of the areas off Fleet Street down there in the original city of London must be the oldest. And I was just strolling through one of the temples, one of the Inns of Court the other day, and I heard organ music. And organ music is one of the few things that I took from my Catholic education that I still cherish and value. I'm talking about the schools I went to, not the religion itself. So I followed the sound of the organ music, and I found a chapel upstairs on the first floor in one of the temples of court. And I sat there and just listened. It was absolutely beautiful. But the fellow was getting a lesson. That's why I remember how difficult it was, because every time there were quite a few mistakes. Love it. I have to give a special shout out to Matthew Rushton as well. I don't normally do surnames on the show when tweets come in, but I feel your pain, Matthew. This is terrible. He says, I've been calling into Mystery Hour for the last 3 or 4 weeks to ask who decides what the collective nouns for animals are, and I've never had a call back. Someone called in today, asked the same question, and at Mr. James OB just said it's one of his favourite questions ever. I am seething. Right, I'm not surprised, mate. That is just brutal. That is absolutely horrible what you've been through, Matt. Bad luck. Paul's in Grays in Essex. Paul, question or answer?
That's a question. Morning, James. Hello, Paul, you're screaming from Grays. I haven't spoken to you for ages.
I'm surprised, actually, because it's your busy time of year is starting now, so you should really be ringing me during the winter.
As usual, we're earning hundreds of thousands. Yes. Right, listen, this should be the ball game, right? Yesterday, you mentioned Jimmy Hill to some Northern
chinny,
bloke.
Chin, I said, and he'd never heard of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, when someone's lying, we done it years ago when we were kids at school.
Yeah.
What's the relation between rubbing your chin, calling someone Jimmy Hill, with Jimmy Hill and lying?
You know the relationship between rubbing your chin and Jimmy Hill?
Yeah, we know that.
Because he had such a big chin.
What's the relationship with lying, though?
Because he had such a big chin.
Right, so why is he lying?
Yeah, I don't know. So you want to know the origins of Chinny Chin Chin or Jimmy Hill, the origins of stroking your chin as an expression an expression of scepticism, isn't it?
That's it.
Yeah. Well, is it not? I mean, you're just beard in some parts of the world.
No. You're clutching at straws.
No, I'm not, mate. In some parts of the world, they say, instead of saying chinny chin chin, they say beard.
What part of the world?
The southwest. I'm actually serious, but I appreciate it sounded a bit chinny chin chin. I'm going to go peak Partridge now. But you know my mate Enzo is an ice cream man. I've mentioned this to you before, I think. I can't remember.
You might have done it, but I'm more famous than Enzo.
You are. But I saw Enzo the other day, and I had a new lolly. I don't know whether you stock it. I had a lemon and lime lolly that is the most delicious lolly I've ever had in my life.
Well, funny you say that, they used to do lager and lime lolly.
That was a long time. They were gross. They used to attract wasps like they were going out of fashion. But this, I'll get the brand name for you, Paul. And next time you ring in, I'll give you a heads up. You want to get some of those lemon and lime lollies in your freezer, mate. Seriously.
Oh, thank you very much.
They're absolutely delicious. It's the choicest of lollies. We used to do Beat Mike. Do you remember? Good golly, Miss Lolly. On this, many. Right, get Paul an answer to that, please. What is the origin of stroking your chin or mentioning your chin or your beard? It is used beard, because yesterday I got loads of messages about that. Tina is in Aylesbury. Tina, question or answer?
Answer.
Oh, carry on.
Right, well, I'm a music teacher, but in addition to that, I happen to have played the trombone, the cello and the guitar, which were the instruments mentioned.
They were.
And I can tell you definitively why and which is the easiest, the hardest, and the in-between is.
Fantastic. So we've got Mummy Bear, Daddy Bear, and Baby Bear when it comes to musical instruments.
Exactly. Yeah, well, you have indeed. But also there's another issue about personality, because if you're a oboe player, you're going to be sitting in the corner opening your sandwiches, whereas if you're a brass player, you're down the pub. But that's another question.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the easiest of those instruments is the guitar. And the reason it's the easiest is because to play or choose which note you're going to play, you simply have to put your finger in the right fret and pull the string.
Yeah.
And if it's not the right note, it's not your fault. It's because it's not in tune.
Yeah.
Get me?
Yeah, right. I do. Yeah.
The middling one is the cello.
I knew it.
Because when you're playing the cello, you have to choose where to put your finger in order to produce a note. But there is a rough...
Because there's no frets. There's no frets on a cello.
Yeah, there's no frets. Ah. Not anymore. They used to be on... when they were played on your knee a long while ago.
Right.
Anyway, that's not the question.
Yeah, go on.
So, yeah, although you have to make the note, if you put it roughly in the right place, you'll roughly get the right answer, the right note.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the hardest is the trombone, and the reason being is that with all brass instruments, you produce the sound not by, as your questioner said, blowing through the instrument, but by buzzing your lips. You vibrate your lips.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, a raspberry, into the instrument.
Mm.
Now, should you exert too much pressure, you'll get a different note, even though you've put down, you know, in the case of a trumpet, the valve, or in the case of trombone, moved your slide to the right position.
Mm.
Okay, so you occasionally hear even the Royal Bugle players make a note and you think, oh, that wasn't quite right.
It's a bit off, isn't it?
So, yeah, even though they're really skilled, because it's such a slight difference in the lips or the amount of air you let through that can change it from one note to another.
This is a beautiful
so in
answer.
Every position.
Mm.
Yeah, in every position. So there you go. That's your definitive answer.
I think it is. I mean, let's not get carried away here. I'm the judge of that, Tina, not you. You can't come on and describe yourself as definitive.
No, but what I mean is I do have experience of all those instruments, plus I do know, because I'm a music teacher, how the sounds are produced and why one thing will be harder than the other.
Yeah, so, I mean, to be fair, the answer only needed to be yes, didn't it? And then with a little bit of illustration, which you've provided perfectly. How hard is a church organ?
Well, I have done that as well. The hardest thing about the church organ is not what you said, all the stops, because a lot of those have combinations and you just press one thing and you get a combination that somebody's already set up.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No, the hardest thing is thinking in three staves.
Yes.
Because the music is written in three staves, which as a pianist, I'm like, no, now you're having a laugh, aren't you?
Mm.
I mean, you're expecting me to look above, in the middle, and below, and do something with my feet as well as both of my hands.
Oh, that's like being a radio presenter.
Yeah, even harder, I would suggest.
Yeah, I've got a Keith. Your average organist doesn't have a Keith. That's a lovely answer, and I'm going to give you a round of applause. Thank you, Tina.
Whoa,
look at
thank
that.
Thank you.
Absolutely amazing. Great work. And I mean, obviously, if you want to query some of the detail of what Tina said, I wouldn't, but someone's saying that fretless guitars exist. I don't know that that's got anything to do with anything. That would just put them in the same category as a cello for being difficult to play. A guitar with frets is easier to play than a guitar without frets. But the answer is just yes. Some instruments are clearly harder to learn and harder to play than other instruments. So thank you to Tina and congratulations to Will for a good question. It's 12:46.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 10 to 1. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Heath is in Manchester. Heath, question or answer?
I've got a question, James.
Carry on.
Okay. During the summer lockdown in 2020, following the panic buying of toilet roll, a lot of people in my town tended to panic buy dogs. Everybody went out and bought dogs for some reason. You know, they needed the company. They were home alone. So I've noticed in my town there's a lot of responsible dog owners that clean up after their dogs. They carry the little poop bags with them.
Yes.
My question is in relation to guide dogs.
Okay.
Because there's a couple of visually impaired gentlemen in my town that have guide dogs.
Yeah.
And I never see the guide dogs go into the toilet. And I was wondering, are guide dogs trained in a special way where they will go to the toilet only when they're at home or only in their own garden? Because
I think we've done this before.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, and I think it you get trained when you get a guide dog. It's not just the dog that needs training. The user needs a bit of training as well. And you're not required to pick it up. You won't get into trouble if you can't see and you don't pick up dog poo. But you are trained to know how to do it even if you can't see it.
Right. Okay.
So you can tell when the dog has stopped for a poo.
But the owner...
And the dog is always going to be in more or less the same place. And therefore, there is a kind of technique for doing it, is what we were told last time by someone with a guide dog.
Really? Right, yeah. Okay. So the visually impaired dog owner, they do actually pick up the mess?
Yeah, they're often. They're not required to in the way that we are. Right.
Okay.
I presume it probably depends slightly on how impaired your vision is. I don't know if you...
Yeah, of course.
The definitive answer is that they can tell where it is and do pick it up.
Okay. Yeah? All right. Well, that's great. Yeah. Thanks
I think
very
there
much.
Might be a thing where they're also... the other bit of your question might be relevant as well, as in it's sort of habitual. It's not like my dog, which poos whenever it wants to. With guide dogs, there's a little bit more of a regularity or a routine to it.
Yeah.
But either way, it is picked up by the owner.
Right. Okay. So I've never seen it happen.
No, nor have I actually.
I've never seen a guide dog suddenly stop in the street and go to the loo like you do many other dogs. So I just thought, I wonder if they're trained to just go to the loo when they're at home in their own garden. But if they do pick it up, but they're not obliged to, that's great.
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm going to give myself a round of applause as well. Thank you, Heath. Very nice. 12:53 is the time. David is in Clacton-on-Sea. David, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello, yeah, just about a musical instrument.
Yes.
It's interesting what the lady said about the guitar, cello and trombone. But I would say that the French horn is the hardest musical instrument.
That's not a steward's inquiry. That's just you ringing in to boast. the question was, are some instruments harder to play than others? To which the answer is clearly yes, which was provided, I felt, fairly definitively by Tina. But you're just here to say, well, hello, I play the French horn, and I think you'll find that's extremely difficult.
Yeah, well, it is. And because the harmonic series is so much closer together because the tubing's so much longer and it's the bore is narrower, so the notes are closer together the higher up you get, which means you have more chance of splitting the notes.
Wow.
That's why more professional and top-end French horn players play wrong notes in orchestra than any other instrument.
Is that how? Well, I did not know that. Qualifications?
So I've got a PhD in music, fellow of the Royal Schools of Music and an ex-professional horn player.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for David.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I love that. It makes sense as well. I love that. I now know more than I did. That was the other thing we used to do on Miss Joe. I used to guarantee at 12 o'clock that you'd know more by 1 o'clock than you did at 12 o'clock. I'm going to introduce that guarantee again. I'm going to bring it back. Richard's in Bath. Richard, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Okay, the food cravings question. It's the microbiome. In your body, you have roughly 100 trillion cells, but only 10 trillion of them have your DNA.
Okay.
The rest of them are bacteria that mostly live in your gut. And this is known as the microbiome. And the bacteria send chemical signals to your brain telling you basically what you need to eat. Now, the good bacteria tell you to eat the good stuff,
right.
You know, the vitamins and proteins and whatever. But the bad bacteria tell you to eat sugars and excess fat.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And the more you feed the bad bacteria, the more they grow, so the stronger the signals get, so the more you eat, so you know, and so on and so on. So you can do something about this by once a year or so, you can do a sort of, you know, three or four week gut purification regime just to flush out as many of the bad bacteria as you can.
What about kefir? What about having kefir every morning?
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem with bioactive foods is that most of the good bacteria get destroyed in your stomach by the hydrochloric acid in your stomach.
Right.
So not much of the good stuff gets through. But there are, you know, I mean, I'm not going to advertise, but you know, I used to be a rep for a company that sold basically a gut purification. scheme, and part of the system was to replace the good bacteria.
That's a good qualifications. I think you've kind of half told us.
Biomedical scientist for 40 years. So, yeah.
Round of applause for Richard.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Lovely stuff. Gary's in Widnes. Gary, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Well, I'm honoured to speak to an SIP on the subject of VIPs.
What's an SIP then? Don't be rude. It's a family programme.
Slightly important person.
Well, I'll take that, Gary. I'll take that. Go on.
Well, there's no definitive answer. As with all these linguistic little acronyms, yeah. It might have come around in the 30s in America, where there was a real fad for acronyms, FBI, MGM, FDR. It might have been because of the huge usage of the telegraph. Yeah. So, you know, you could say, oh, so-and-so's on the plane, make sure, look after him, he's a VIP, you know, it's less usage. It might have come in from the Royal Air Force, actually, in the 40s. Where for the same reason, to shorten messages. But everyone obviously then knows what it was.
Yeah, on your toes, there's a VIP coming in.
Exactly.
Qualifications?
I said to you, the young lady who said she was a bit mental, by the way, which is a very endearing trait of hers, I was the sub-editor. She said, I'm a bit mental. I think what she means, it's gone mental. It's dead.
You mean the switchboard? Yes, okay, carry on.
The young lady. Anyway, no, I said it was the sub-editor for the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yes.
But that might have been at FIB.
So how do you know this then?
It's an English usage website. And it does have lots of little fascinating facts.
Didn't look it up today. Did you look it up today?
No, I'm like the guy before. You know, he's always going on YouTube.
Yeah, no, fair enough, because it's usually Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable. You've obviously been consulting the online equivalent of that. You'd enjoy Brewer's, Gary, actually, if you want to put it on your Christmas list. It's full of stuff like this, and it's earned you a round of applause. I'm rushing because I'm short of time. Shall I squeeze in one more? No? No, I haven't got time. Tom, I do apologise. So we never got an answer. I'm in a really tricky position now, because my favourite contribution was a question that hasn't been answered. That doesn't matter. It's still my favourite contribution. So it's going to go to Joe. The question about why animals have collective nouns. That is the winner of this week's Mystery Outboard game. That's it from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow morning from 10. Here's Sheila Fogarty.